Okay, ladies and gentlemen, chance for questions. Yeah, well, he's wrong on both fronts. The figures, actually, Mr. Key, on ring fencing came from the Treasury's own documents for budget 2010. We didn't make the figures up, that they are Treasury figures. The second question about inflated value of dividends, actually what he's done is deflate the average level of dividends. I might ask David Cunliffe just to talk on the detail of that.
Yes, certainly. Phil's absolutely right. The ring fencing estimates are straight from the Treasury. What Mr. Key has argued is that there would be a reduction in that revenue flow as investors change their behaviour. And I think that that is A, speculative. It's out of line with Treasury's forecasting practice. And in any case, it's likely to be mitigated by the other anti-avoidance measures that we'll be putting in place, particularly around trust law reform, which would make it very difficult for investors to avoid tax in that way.
On the dividend front, the other killer blow for Key there on the dividends is that the Treasury assumes ongoing returns from the SOEs at the rate that we are assuming will abate. So our figures are actually based on the Treasury figures that are in the pre-foo.
And what's the assumed rate then, I mean, in terms of borrowing for the New Zealand Super Fund? You accept that you borrow about $2.5 billion for that.
We accept that until we go into surplus, the funds that go into the Cullen Fund to borrow here.
And what's the assumed rate of return then on that?
The Treasury, it's the same rate that the Treasury used for the fund that is already in existence, which is that over the longer term, you would expect that it returns 2.5% per annum more than the Crown cost of funds, which is 5%.
And what are your concerns then about, you know, this, which you spoke about earlier, Scott, about the uncertainty still, especially around Europe, of this returning in the years ahead?
Can I just ask
Yeah.
Well, you know, if it wasn't for the super fund, in the 2011 year, the government's deficit would have been $3.5 billion worse than it was. Because in that year, the government booked a $3.5 billion increase in the value of the Cullen Fund.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
It's a long-term fund.
It is a long-term fund, but in terms of your short-term numbers, you know, there's a number of assumptions here that could go either way, couldn't they? I mean, it could be greater.
So there is no doubt that there is an element of risk in the New Zealand Superannuation Fund, but it's also true that, as David Parker has said, during the worst recession since the 1930s, and taking a relatively short time horizon with that in it, the fund is still making more than Crown cost of capital, and it is an absolutely reasonable assumption, according to the Treasury in their pre-food baselines, to assume an ongoing margin between the Crown cost of capital and the returns to the fund. And can I just add another point onto what Phil said before? It was, in our view, extremely unusual that the pre-foo booked the proceeds of sales from the assets without booking the loss of dividends. It surprised us a great deal, and that's why that has been corrected in these accounts.
So what you say, Mr. Goff, is it's $4 billion extra over 4 years, over the four-year period.
What we've said is set out there very clearly. There will be extra short-term borrowing because we're not selling the assets to do what John Key says he's doing, which is to buy the school buildings and hospitals. But we get back into surplus at the same time, we pay down the debt quicker, and we keep our assets. That's the difference.
On page 9, we correct the pre-check to include the foregone dividends. Is it right? You're assuming that those assets that they're going to sell down, you're assuming that they will be returning dividends of $1 billion over the next few years each year.
Yep. Can I take you through this? On page 9, if you look at the third line down, forecast return from all SOEs, $1.006 billion in 2012-13. See that line there?
Yeah.
That is a Treasury figure. That figure is Treasury data, should say Treasury data instead of date there, Treasury data until 15 and 16, and thereafter the projection, which you can't get from Treasury, we've just taken forward as the same rate of growth as GDP growth.
So where's that 84% from?
The 84% is the value of the dividend of the SOEs that are slated for sale as a share of the total SOE revenue pie.
And how did you figure out that 84%?
Historical average
of
4 years.
And how much?
Well, that's reflected in the 0.845 you've got there.
So the
12-13.
So the
and selling down 49% of that gets you to 397.
But the National's figures released on those SOEs say there's an average return of 350 million.
Across the whole lot, yeah. Now what
on those SOEs. And that, and they're saying your one's been boosted up by that one off sale, one of the power companies sold an asset in Australia. They're saying your figure's been boosted up
like
that.
Yeah, these companies make capital distributions to the government regularly, irregularly. There have been the proceeds from the profits that were made in Australia. There were other capital distributions that have been made from time to time by the companies in addition to their dividends. And the most recent one this year was when Genesis purchased for Meridian Energy $500 million worth of assets on the Waitaki. That money didn't go to Genesis, it was paid to the government.
So
the returns include a combination of capital distributions plus dividends.
So Alex, at the end of the day, this is an argument between straight dividends and total shareholder return, which includes capital distribution. But if you are the owner and you are selling 49%, the bottom line is you are losing the capital distribution on that 49% as well as the straight dividend. So total shareholder return is an absolutely appropriate.
Are you banking on those irregular?
We're banking on the same rate of return from those SOEs that the Treasury has already forecast, and then we've said that, to be fair, you have to ratably decrease that in accordance with the proportion of those assets that you are selling.
Exactly.
That's all we have done. We've used Treasury figures, not our own.
Just going back to the ring fencing issue, and the Treasury figures we're talking about there, they were looking back what happened the previous few years, from what I recall?
Yes, they were. That was advice tendered to the government in 2010.
Yeah. And that was different rules around working families and, of course, much higher interest rate.
There will be some.
So you would have had, there was a peak of losses around 07, 08, from memory.
There will be some historical fluctuation, that's true, but against that we are bringing in another comprehensive set of anti-avoidance measures which will make it very difficult for investors to shift behaviour. Our advice is that it is impossible to quantify the difference, and that there is no basis for the government to have simply arbitrarily halved the 2010 Treasury advice to the Minister.
I'm also told that they had similar advice in respect of some of the measures that they took from Treasury, that there could be some change in behaviour that resulted in a reduction of the number, and they booked the full number just as we are proposing. So they should apply the same conduct to themselves that they are asserting that we should use.
But if they were calculating that based on the past, I mean, there was a period when you had a property boom and a credit boom, we're in a very different world now. Why would you assume that the same sort of losses would accumulate then?
Well, we know from the Savings Working Group report to the government that the overall money, the overall tax that's paid by residential investment has been a negative number, i.e. they're getting a tax return. So
yes, but only when it's negative from around 04-05.
Yeah, but that hides in it. That's true, but that was the average, and there are lots of people that are still, we get grizzles from them on the track, I can tell you. There are lots of people who are currently claiming losses from residential property investment that they're offsetting against other income, which we have said they will no longer be able to offset. And if that wasn't real, we wouldn't get those people complaining to us on the election trail.
I don't think that's the issue, though. The issue is taking a number from a peak period and taking it forward and building that into your fiscal numbers.
I would say that the 265 number would be closer to a long-term indicator average. There is some argument that there could be some fluctuation around that, but our advice is it's impossible to quantify, and that any fluctuation would be mitigated by the more stringent anti-avoidance measures that we would bring in alongside loss ring fencing.
And if you want a number that goes the other way, You know, if you have a look at our spending profile here, we've said that in the first 2 years, the future allowance under the budget of $800 million additional allowance in each of the next 2 years is very, very tight, and it is very, very tight, and that will all be eaten up in wage settlements and inflationary cost increases for benefits and the like. Where are the National Party funding their additional promises from in the next 2 years? Because we're actually saying we're funding them from additional money that's needed, not from within that 800. So again, we're being more prudent than the National Party.
It's a very important point. The counterfactual here is the PREFU, which is government business as usual. Any spending promises that National makes during its campaign would be additional to the PREFU if they exceed the spending allowance which is in there.
Where is the reinvestment in the New Zealand? Is there a reason why the reinvestment in the New Zealand super fund isn't detailed on page 11? Why is that not?
Because
in this list of impacts on expenditure?
Because it's not being spent. We're not pissing it against the wall, we're putting it in the Cullen Fund.
And it's still expenditure.
Well, it's not operating expenditure, no, it's not.
And it's borrowing.
Yes, borrowing. It is borrowing. That's
borrowing,
right.
It's gross debt borrowing. These are net debt, including Superfund asset.
So it's $4.5 billion, isn't it? $4.5 billion, $750 in the first year, $1.5 in the second year, $2.25
Yeah. And what National does is they put that cost to us and say we're borrowing that amount extra, and they ignore the asset that is purchased from it.
Why are you, but shouldn't it be on here like with everything else?
Well, it shows up in the... No, not on that basis. What they're saying...
That's operating expenditure. So it doesn't show up as operating expenditure because it's movement on the capital account. Mm. And this is a capital account expressed in net terms, not in gross terms.
Yeah, but like when you're doing your own books at, when you're doing your own books at home, You take your KiwiSaver comes out of your wages.
It's on page 8, Paddy. Have a look on page 8.
Oh, yeah. Second line. So the line, Paddy, it starts at minus 0.074, minus 0.65. No. That's unbooking the revenues from the asset sales, cumulative.
I'm talking about the super. Where's the super?
Yeah, but what we show is net Crown debt, including the New Zealand super fund.
Yeah.
What the National Party did in their last term of office is change the way in which they report Crown debt in order to exclude the benefits of the super fund.
So that $750 million next year, that 1.5 is included in that net Crown core debt line, is that what you're saying? I'm just saying
Let me explain it quite simply from the start.
Yeah.
It doesn't show up as a direct expenditure here because that would be on a gross basis, this is on a net basis. What is accounted for here is any interest cost, which is internalised in the model on the borrow. And secondly, any earnings from the fund difference because the investment made, which shows up as a revenue line.
Sure.
Okay. So they are fully internalised back into the operating accounts. If this was a gross debt table, you would see the addition set out there, but this is a net debt table, and the new investment is offset by the matching asset on the book. So it cancels each other out, which is why there's not a separate accounting entry here.
Exactly. Yeah, I understand it, but I mean, it's... Yeah. I'm still saying it is a ghost, isn't it?
It's implicit in the line that drives the interest cost and the earning cost that is in it.
This is a fairer measure of the worth of the country. What the government is trying to tell you is that even if you put, if you save that $4 billion into the Cullen Fund, we are no better off as a country. It's not true.
I mean, I'm not trying to have an argument with you guys, but I'm just saying anyone with common sense is going to say, where's the reinvestment in the super fund in the box here?
It's in the assets.
Why are you...
These are net debt figures. The government's trying to tell you that there's a $17 billion hole in our figures. And we've been trying to explain that a significant portion of that is the fund, is the money that's spent in the super fund that is represented in an asset in the box.
Why don't you just do what PREFU does and provide two lines? the net debt, one with and one without the assets.
Oh, very simple to do, but we're presenting here the net debt figures. We're not pretending them that they're the gross debt figures.
Will you be using
ways of defining net debt?
Yes, sir.
Net of assets that you can readily sell, and net of assets that are locked up.
That's right. But we think that the logic. Well, because we've chosen to present the net accounts the way that they were under the previous government, which we think is a fairer representation of the state of the books. That is, it takes into account the Crown's financial assets, including the New Zealand Super Fund, which is its largest financial asset, and it offsets that against debt. That's entirely logical. In fact, it's illogical in our view to exclude the New Zealand Super Fund assets, and we would go so far as to say the current government did that because they had in mind to suspend contributing to it and didn't want the hole to be visible.
Well, effectively, by including the New Zealand Super Fund, you're saying you could use it to pay down debt.
No, we're saying it's an asset which remains on the books, which offsets debt.
It's an asset used to be spent in the future. It's not used
that's
to
correct.
Be spent now.
That's right. It is an asset, and it's also good, prudent accounting practice to match the life of a liability with the life of an asset, and that's why it's prudent to have long-life financial assets to match the long-life financial liabilities of future superannuation payments, which we might add, we are doing a heck of a lot more than the current government to mitigate, because we have had the courage to tell the truth about the need to raise the age.
So we
can't get a lecture from the National Party about our accounting for superannuation.
So when do you envisage starting to spend what is in the super fund?
From memory, and I can come back to you with more exact details, the drawdown on the fund starts in about 15 years and goes through to about 50 years. It's in that order of period.
So shouldn't you be keeping that off your tracks until you start spending?
No, because they stay as an asset on the government's books. They don't have to be liquidated in a particular period to count as an asset. Were we not fully accounting in our operating expenses for the cost of the interest to service the borrowing, or leaving out the earnings on the fund, then we wouldn't have closed the loop. But we've done both of those things, so there's a full closed circle.
How confident can you be with the extra revenue you expect to get from anti-avoidance measures? I mean, last year's budget also had a hefty increase.
I know there's been some debate about that, but let me be very clear that if anything, I think this is conservative. Here are some contextual pieces of data that I think establish that. The first is that we've got $200 billion worth of property investment claiming a net tax credit, I believe, about $500 million, paying no tax at all. Secondly, from memory, there's around $5.5 billion worth of outstanding tax debt, of which the IRD says about 60% is collectible.
That's right.
The IRD has variously estimated a 5-to-1 and sometimes up to a 30-to-1 return on further Crown investment in chasing avoidance. Now, on any of those triangulated measures, there is more to get. Now, we are not just talking about chasing tax cheats based on the current law. We are talking about law change, which, for example, would pick up the work of the Law Commission and change the treatment of trusts to move it more to a look-through basis to the beneficiary's tax regime. Now, that would be a significant change to the law. It will need considerable expert advice, but that's part of the reason that we're phasing that increase in over time. We believe our estimates are realistic.
Is the ETS revenue, does that include agriculture premium 2013 and
Reverting to the ETS revenue,
David?
The difference between our forecast of ETS revenues and theirs is that we assume agriculture is coming in at the earlier date, and we have an average price of $25 per tonne, whereas I think their price is $17 per tonne. We've chosen a figure that's within the range recently, and it's probably a fair long-term estimate.
So does that remove the 2-for-1?
No. It's only agriculture. The only thing that we've booked is agriculture coming in early at that higher price. Can I say, though, that it raises another point? The National Party has been saying during this election that they're not committed to bringing agriculture in 2015, and yet the PREFU includes it as a number.
That's right.
So, again, if I'm just pushing back a bit the other way, How can the National Party assert that they might not bring it in when they've already booked the revenue?
How much is it?
It's on page 97 of the PREFU, and it's included from 2015 the revenues from emissions pricing net that they've already booked are $300 million per annum. No, that part of that is agriculture. I don't know. We haven't been able to get the breakdown from them.
So why aren't you committing to going to the obligation?
Well, we've said that we're, as the National Party have said, that we're reviewing what David Cagle has said. That's a legislative review that you're aware is required every 5 years or so under the ETS. We're looking at that as they are, but what we have said is that we think agriculture, and we've committed to agriculture coming in earlier than them.
In other words, we're being conservative again in our fiscal assumptions because we're not assuming.
I don't think we will. I think we'll be
waiting for the review.
Well, the review's come out, but we'll be waiting. We'll see, the officials will also be reporting to the government on their view of the review, and it would be a bit imprudent for us to actually just launch in before we've actually seen what they think of it too.
Go back to accounting for the asset
status. Okay, I'm going to make this the last question simply because I've got to be at Grey Power and Horowhenua in about 25 minutes, and I don't have a convoy, but I'm not going to ask it to speak, Dave.
Yeah, go back to the account of the asset sales. You said, I'm right, I think, that I didn't include the lost dividends from the assets that are being sold.
Mm.
And I haven't quite got the model of the Treasury yet, but the suggestion to me was that they also didn't put the savings in interest payments on the lower debt that would have as a result of that.
Yeah, we've accounted for both the dividends and the higher cost of interest.
The line you showed me yesterday was the same as the national line in terms of the impact of the asset sales over the years.
I'm clear that we've included both the cost of interest and the change to dividend flow.
Okay, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If there's any more technical questions, please talk to either of the Davids at the end of the meeting.